chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my dab in the middle of it. Rest my dab in the middle. We are. Rest my dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this first hour with a report by Greg Reese, and he's talking about Davos. They've just concluded the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, and this is a meeting that encompasses the major corporate powers in the world, and they're working to create a new world order. But here we go with what Greg Reese has to say about it.
In Davos, Switzerland, Klaus Schwab and his fellow wannabe tyrants have come out into the open as the arbiters of world government. They are openly calling for world war and the end of national sovereignty. And they openly acknowledge that they must move quickly to be victorious. Many are celebrating the fact that the people of Sri Lanka are rising up against their corrupt politicians, burning their homes and destroying city property. But this is nothing to celebrate. This is exactly what the World Economic Forum is hoping for. They want governments to be destroyed and the people to lose all faith in the nation-state. Their plan is to starve the people into destroying their own governments so they can act as saviors. It is important for Americans to realize that the current administration is not failing at all. They are accomplishing exactly what they set out to do. They did not steal the 2020 election to secure power. They did it to destroy America and destabilize the entire system. And they are rapidly succeeding. The voices calling for violence are as ignorant and mad as they sound. Violence towards who? How will you organize? And who are you going to fight? Your brainwashed sheep neighbors? That is exactly what the globalists want you to do. And if your plan is to wait until they come to your door, then you'll just be a dangerous animal in a cave on someone else's private property. But there are solutions. For example, before passing in March of 2022, the great Jordan Maxwell's last project was to save America from global governance with America 21. America 21's mission is to gut the system of globalist interference and reclaim all of America by 2025 so that we can rebuild our agriculture, production, and energy and become a self-sufficient nation that serves the people. America 21 is calling for a complete withdrawal from all treaties and influences of the United Nations and World Economic Forum. Washington, D.C. is just a symbol of our old corrupt federal government. The new world leaders are living abroad, and the only way they can control us is through the compliance of our local governments. According to America 21, your focus needs to be where you live, in your county and city. Global governance ultimately depends on your county being taken over. This is where you need to resist now. This is how the United Nations and the globalists have been doing it, and it's the only way to properly reverse it. America 21 has been having success in Montana, and they freely share their working model and support at America21Century.com, such as learning what language to look for in your local governments to detect UN initiatives and protocols being deployed by your local officials. Keywords such as 2030, sustainable development, and carbon neutral. Your local officials have to live with you, and in most cases, will prefer to keep their jobs. Our voting system may be broken, but our elected officials still work for us. And if enough of us come together, we can put the pressure on them to renounce global governance and to serve the will of the people. This is the law of the land. It really is just that simple. But we have to come together and get active. Americans have a choice. We can either take action to purge the system of corrupt politicians and their thugs, or we can stop complaining about them and be good slaves. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
The Davos Group is a very powerful group, and they're working feverishly to reduce the population. So coming up next is Dr. Judy Mekovits, and she pioneered in the vaccine problem and the engineering of these vaccines, and she really has some deep information and research, and Alex is going to be interviewing her. We'll put up her, we'll embed this total interview, but I've just put up some of the best parts of it, so listen carefully, but we'll have the complete interview that you can see and hear on thesecrettruth.com.
No, but also never another vaccine, not a polio shot, not an MMR, not, they've all been synthetic poisons. That's why I showed you all those viruses. They've been in those cell lines continuously growing in our lab for 50 years. We've got them in freezers. We grow them up. I can prove Omicron was in humans, including me and my husband. In 2010, we seroconverted and created antibodies. So the real important end game is they've got to get everybody injected, because then the rest of your environment, your food and your particulates is poison. And so this is why I talk about serum, and because it's a drug of Monsanto Bayer.
I'll talk about what you're saying. As I'm not a scientist, is they've merged immortal cell line viruses with spike protein as the infectious delivery system?
Correct. They're creating the spike proteins in the cell lines. They don't have to merge. We've been doing this since the 60s. These cell lines have been growing in our lab since the 60s. So we've been experimenting various viruses and seeing if you could add them and combine them.
So knowing what they do to humans and lab rats, what do you expect to happen to the public? Because mainline insurance companies are seeing a 40% increase in death.
That's exactly what we expect in the heavily vaccinated. But the way to solve the problem is never again get another shot or take their contaminated products of Bayer Monsanto. No more GMO, not food. Every shot is a genetically modified organism. Every shot is gain of function. Every shot is synthetic. They've always been that way. They've lied to us, and look how healthy we are if we eat clean food. So the last picture, the call to action is in slide 69, but just go to slide 70, because what we show you is when you walk away from them, in that little boy with the monkey pox, all we did was give him clean food and products like the Zelenko Z-Stack. This was a slide I made in 2019. I'm standing there trying to stop them from inoculating the vaccine injured. That's children who already have seizures. And I'm on a street corner in Oxnard where they're forcing it on these children with the criminal bills of Newsom and Senator Pan. We knew they were trying to kill our kids. But the last, and all of these corrupt people, if that had happened, we would never had COVID. Every single piece of data I'm showing you, we had in 2014 and presented to the FBI and presented to the Ninth Circuit Court, the Attorney General, and they did nothing except pay off the criminals. And that's what Tony Fauci did.
I totally agree. Talk about Fauci, but you predicted it. It happened. It's on record. The research is there. But you said they're caught. I agree. The world's waking up to them. What do you expect them to pull next? Another bioweapon release they've cooked up in a lab?
The only way they can do that is by injecting it. It's already in the lab. So look at the last slide. I don't care what they do next, because it's in our control. If we walk, that's that same little boy All we gave him was clean food, similar to one of the products you just showed, where it's they've poisoned our food. They poisoned our animal. They admit it. Look at slide 68. When we were getting religious exemptions as under our Constitution, look at slide 68, the form that Bayer Monsanto sent to the people. Oh, we understand you have a problem with us using aborted feed cell lines in injections as or in the purity of the body, your belief in the purity of the body. Here's every product that you eat, that you take, that Bayer makes, and he said it's not exhaustive. Aspirin, Benadryl, Maalox, they're all loaded with aborted fetal cell line, with sincitin, with the central peptide component of snake venom that humans have a natural God-given immune response to. It's called human endogenous retrovirus W. It's the proof that God's immunity is all you need. They can't hack our chromosomes unless they inject it or we keep ingesting the poison. They're poisoning our food, as you're saying. All we have to do is turn away every human being. I'm infected with all of these things. I have Ebola. I have everything. I have antibodies to them. I'm immune. You never inject an AIDS patient with anything because you'll spread AIDS through his body and through his family's bodies. And that's what the papers and that's what everything says here. They knew they got the healthcare worker sick. Nobody wears a mask. It destroys your own immune system. There's nothing about any of this that is safe, comfortable, or anybody
else.
Explain
that. Wearing a mask makes your body turn off its immune system.
Because you're hypoxic. Hypoxia inducible factor 1 alpha is an on-off switch, a blowtorch on cancer. Sincitin is a fusogenic peptide that fuses together cancer cells. The XMRVs have a mouse sincitin. Your own body says, that's not me, that's mouse. Autoimmune diseases, we can't tell the difference between self and non-self. You never inject anything on the first day of life because it dysregulates the expression of your
genes. Why don't babies get sick for 6 months? But you inject them, it just destabilizes that.
Right, and you never inject in pregnancy. And everything here shows you how they've been trying to experiment by injecting pregnant women and injecting. And so they finish their experiments. They know from this shot that they got it. So now it's kill everybody. Call it COVID, cremate them so you don't have the sequences, and we can show you in this book, we can show you in these books, we have freezers full of the cell lines that we handed the FBI in 2014, and they did nothing except cover it up. President Obama led the way to murder these people. That's what the crimes against humanity are. Fauci knows exactly what they're doing. They're poisoning our food. Every one of these shots is poison. But if we all turn away and turn back to God, we don't believe in their God. Our cult is not scientism. We believe in our God. Yes, we believe in the purity of the body. And no, you're not ever touching me again. And then they don't pull anything. Monkeypox has been there since 2011. I just showed you the slide. In every polio vaccine, and most people are just fine. Stop, people. Just walk away and say no more. This is our country, one nation under God, and we don't bow down to Fauci or any other one world order. They cannot hack our genome unless you let them. That's my rant. Stop injecting. Walk away. Eat clean food. Buy clean food. Don't eat their glyphosate and their GMO and their poison, and they go down. Done. No more. We're out of your game. We're out of your economy. You can't. We're one nation under God. And the Honorable Minister Farrakhan told his people, and they didn't do it. How many people are saved if we all stand
up?
That's
like Africa has the lowest COVID rate, like 1%. Everybody else is 50 because they're not dumb. They didn't take it.
And they take ivermectin and Cerumen all the time prophylactically. They're not horse pills. If your doctors don't know that purines make up the base pairs of our DNA, that G proteins are hundreds of proteins that control sense of taste and smell, HIV was to, AZT was to AIDS. The AZT killed the guys. The XMRVs in the women.
And Dr. Bogovitz, you are on fire, and you're totally right, and you're angry, and you should be. How do people find your fine work?
TheRealDrJudy.com. Our websites are TheRealDrJudy.com. You can get all of our books at PlagueTheBook.com, at TheGreatAwakeningBook.com. They're all there. Not one word has ever been disproven. Every reference is there. They're not my opinion.
Frustrated because I'm not a scientist like you, but this is all mainline. What you're saying is all public. Join us in studio. We'll fly you here. Join us again on a routine basis. Everybody can find your great site. Dr. Judy Mogovitz, thank you so much. The Real Dr. Judy.
We'll have the full interview up on thesecrettruth.com. We've got a special report next from Dan Patrick, Lieutenant Governor of Texas, done early this morning on Fox Network. Here we go with Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick.
Yeah, let's bring in Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who joins us now on the program. Lieutenant Governor, thank you for being with us this morning.
Good morning.
Let's just pick up right there. We've been able to hear from you for over the last couple of days. Just want to get your reaction to those latest details.
So, this has been a long road. We've had, since I became Lieutenant Governor and Governor Abbott was elected back in 2014, we've had five shootings now. Walmart, Sutherland Springs, Odessa, Santa Fe, and this shooting, 90 or so people killed. Plus, we've lost over 50 officers in the line of duty killed by violent criminals. So this takes a toll on us. And when we sit down with law enforcement, we expect to be told the truth in our briefing. I was in the briefing with the governor and Senator Cornyn and Senator Cruz and about 20 other people on Wednesday before we held our press conference. And we were told a different set of facts than we now know. And whether that was purposeful or whether that was because people, and that was about 24 hours after the shooting, because they were still in a state of chaos and maybe had not had any sleep and were in shock and misremembered things. The bottom line is we have to have the facts and the truth, because it only makes the situation worse for the families when they hear changing stories, and particularly when they heard about this 45-minute delay, or a security officer who wasn't there, even though we were told he was there. And the governor, as he mentioned yesterday, took copious notes along the entire, was sitting next to him. He took copious notes. We all asked questions, and we were told a different story than we now know. And so the families are
Lieutenant
angry.
Governor,
they have a right to be angry. Yes.
And so to clarify, Lieutenant Governor, whether or not you were misled, whether or not it was a lie, whether or not it was a mistake, you were told a different story. What story was it that you were told?
Well, we were told that there was a security officer, and they were a little hazy on how the engagement went, but that a security officer was there. Well, it turned out he was not on campus. He drove onto the campus, but he was not on campus as we were told and led to believe. No one mentioned the fact that there was this 45-minute to an hour hold by the chief of the police of the school district while there were still shots being fired. Now, we believe that most of those shots were being fired into the door of the wall to hold back law enforcement, but we don't know. And so imagine the parent who has to go through this for the rest of their life, and they will be thinking, was my child still alive and could have been saved? So that was another fact that we weren't told. And so this is heartbreaking. This is horrendous. And I've been, as I said, with these shootings, one of the parts of this job that you don't ever want is to have to go to a funeral of particularly a child, but anyone killed in a shooting, or one of our police officers killed the line of duty. And we've had a lot of funerals, a lot of memorial services, a lot of hospital visits. So I take this personally, and I know the governor takes it personally. And for me, it's 140 or 150 people killed in Texas in the last 6 or 7 years of collective anger when we're not told the truth.
Lieutenant Governor, ultimately, now that we do know the information and we think we know better what transpired, did the police act the right way based on what they knew? I mean, with a full appreciation of what law enforcement does, we know that. Based on what you know, did they follow the right protocols to get to try to get those kids?
No. Colonel Steve McCraw, head of our state troopers, who took over the investigation after the fact with the Texas Rangers, they were asked to come in and investigate this. He was right yesterday. They did not follow protocol. But let me be very clear about something, because there's been some misunderstanding or misreporting, and that is people feel like the case in Parkland where no one went in, these police went in within 4 minutes or so of, after the shooter went into that unlocked door, which should have never happened, that open door. But they were there 3 or 4 minutes, and they bravely encountered him, and they were shot. Some of them were wounded. No one left the school. They hunkered down in the hallway, about 19 of them, during this time, so that he did not escape anywhere else in the school. So these policemen did the right thing at the beginning, and many wanted to go in. And the police chief, look, this is a six-man or seven-man police department. The police chief, and you know he'll leave this with the rest of his life, but he was in charge. He was the incident commander. He made that decision to hold. And again, he'll have to live with that the rest of his life. But make no mistake, no policemen ran out. They stayed. And in the end, by Border Patrol, or a combination of people led by the Border Patrol, went in against this assault weapon. And you know, Pete, you know that when you go in there, one, two, three, or more of them could have been killed. So the police individuals did the right thing and were brave. And I know the people outside, the parents, were hearing these shots, and some thought maybe the police were not doing anything. But it was the decision to hold that was the mistake that did not follow protocol. It was the security officer not on the campus that was the mistake. It was an open door held by a rock that allowed that person to get it. And that teacher will live with that decision also. But my focus through this, and when we had the press conference on Wednesday, the mic was being handled from the governor to introduce me to speak, and that's when Beto O'Rourke stood up and made a total ass of himself. And what offended me was not that he interrupted me speaking. What offended me was that he put himself above these families. And so that's my only focus. And I said at the time when they ushered him out, I said, can't we spend just a day or a week focus on these families and the pain? The pain is unimaginable. I've been there before with these families. It's unimaginable. As my pastor once said, when you go to these events, there's nothing you can say. There's nothing I can say as lieutenant governor to heal that pain. You just are there out of respect. And that was disrespectful what he did. And so I canceled all my events. I said, I'm not doing any more campaign events or fundraising for a couple of weeks. We just put all this aside. Our only focus should be on the families. And what has made this worse for these families is the changing of the facts almost on a daily basis. And there has to be accountability for it.
Well, there has to be accountability, no question about it. We have to learn the lessons. Some of the lessons we learned from past shootings, it didn't seem like we learned that. Maybe we finally will. Is there going to be accountability for those officers who the governor says misled him?
That will have to be all sorted out. And that will be, those are going to be local decisions made by the school district, or that will be handled there. And again, I want to separate this out. The police that went in were brave. The police that were on hold were following their orders. Eventually some went in and said, it's time to go. But it was a bad decision. And that decision cost lives. Yeah.
Lieutenant Governor, can I ask you really quickly? I find this piece of information, you have direct access to information that we do not have.
Yes.
But I hear you saying there's fog of war, there's a lot of brave officers ready to go in. The police chief in Uvalde made the call to hold back. There are reports he didn't know if there were children alive still in the room.
Right.
He didn't know if it was a hostage situation. But we've heard reports of these 911 calls coming from inside the classroom. And again, you have information we do not have. Were those 911 calls not being relayed to officers on the scene? Did that Uvalde police chief not have access to information that there were children alive in the room?
Well, we still don't know that, and the interviews are still going on. One of the problems we have across America is different police are on different bands, and whether they got that information directly or not. But the truth is, it doesn't matter. They should have gone in. They should have already been in at that point. That's the point that we're making here. He viewed it, and this was not the Uvalde police chief. This was the police chief of the school district, a 6 or 7 man department. Okay, did he have the experience to make that decision then? He was the incident commander. It was on his campus. And that was the key. And look, we, after the Santa Fe shooting, we put in over $100 million into hardening our schools, into metal detectors, into, you know, the doors. That door, when it was finally shut, it did not automatically lock. And we put in the funding for schools to do that. This was a different kind of lock that had to be activated, apparently. And we train our teachers to carry if they wish. Look, we've got about 9,000 campuses in Texas, 1,200 school districts, 5.5 million kids in public schools. We left these decisions to be optional by the school districts. But the point is here is that no matter what we do, and we should have one entrance in and one entrance out of every school, it should be bulletproof glass on the front, a vestibule, another bulletproof glass, and that's what should happen. And so when the doors are open and police don't follow protocol, these things happen. But I joined the governor. I'm angry. It should not have happened. But my focus is on the families, and that's what we have to focus on, is healing them during this time and put politics aside.
Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, thank you for your time. You're right. Ultimately, you want cops charging to the sound of the guns. And for some reason, that didn't happen here. Thanks for your insight. Right. God bless you. Appreciate your time.
Mekovic nails it on the head. She's really a very righteous person. She says some things that are so far out there that it's hard to grasp. But we're going to give her site where you can pick up on further information and reports on that. But next we have a report coming in on the Sussman trial. We have two people, one person that attended the trial, and Greg Jarrett will discuss this with Sean Hannity. So here we go with Sean Hannity discussing the Sussman trial and what went on Friday.
Now, we brought to you yesterday, we told you all about jury selection and the jury pool in the Michael Sussman case, but we had a huge blockbuster breakthrough in this case today that brings all of this right into Hillary Clinton's, right onto her lap. And she was in the courtroom. Alina Haba is with us, and she is the counsel for President Trump, and also our friend Greg Jarrett, who wrote two best-selling books on this issue about the Russia hoax. Thank you both for being with us. Alina, you were in the courtroom today. Walk us through what happened with Robbie Mook.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Mook.
Well, maybe
today.
Explain to everybody who Mook is. People might not know he worked for Hillary.
Yeah, for sure. He not only worked for Hillary, he actually ran her campaign and was the manager of Hillary for America campaign from April 2015 through the election that she lost. He has extensive experience for Kerry, state representatives, Clinton in 2008, and DCC, et cetera. So Robbie Mook is very well versed in this game. And in this trial, we are hearing a lot of reference to what's called an October surprise, which is effectively when you put out information, whether it be verified or not, that's damaging to your opponent and a candidate in a time frame where they do not have the opportunity to respond or negate what was said. Today we
by the way, there would have been a real October surprise in 2020 because the Hunter Biden laptop was real, which is why the media, the biggest donors to Joe Biden's campaign, desperately in the final weeks of the 2020 election didn't want the truth in this case to come out. But that was a real life, not a manufactured October surprise.
Correct. Just like how they're distracting from this trial right now by putting out information about UFOs. When it suits them, they distract the media. Look at the shiny ball. But what happened here today, you cannot avoid. Robbie Mook took the stand under oath, and I watched him say that he had a meeting with Mark Elias from Perkins Coie, who was the DNC and Hillary Clinton's general counsel, who had this whole Fusion GPS manufactured documents created partially by his firm. The white papers were drafted. He then goes to the campaign, has a meeting with Robbie Mook, Podesta, Palmieri, Jake Sullivan, who's currently in the White House, as frightening as that is a national security advisor. And he said that we all agreed that we were going to take this information that their lawyers brought and give it to the press. And what's worse is he personally called Hillary Clinton. He testified on the stand today, and she approved it.
So Hillary, just to be very, very clear here, let's start at the beginning. Hillary Clinton and her campaign, and this was brought out on the first day of trial, that this was an October surprise. They funded money. They funneled money through a law firm, Perkins Coie. That's where Mark Elias worked, correct? And that's
correct.
Where Sussman worked, who's now on trial for lying to the FBI. And they then hired an op research firm called Fusion GPS.
Right.
Fusion GPS then hires Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele puts together a series of documents that we now refer to as the dossier, unverifiable, totally debunked, a series of lies about Donald Trump that were never true, and that even Baker admitted on the stand yesterday, he didn't put any stock in any of this at all.
Correct. And they also had new star Rodney Jaffe, who was under Sussman's domain, who also works for the DNC and actually had top secret FBI clearance. That's how integrated he is, who helped the FBI GC get a job after he left the FBI. It's incestual, Sean. And what they did was they created both the server story, the Alpha Bank story, the dossier, and they pushed it through. And Hillary today, we found out, knew that this was given to her by people she was paying to do do opposition research. She's paying for them to create this. She gives it, doesn't verify it, gives it to the news, and Robbie Mook said today on the stand, I expected that the news vet it.
He expected the news to vet their slime. I love that. Russian disinformation. Let me bring in Greg Jarrett. He had two number one best-selling books on this very topic. Everything you reported, Greg, everything we reported, everything our ensemble cast reported was dead on accurate. And I remember when we first were talking about the dossier and you'd read the whole thing, and you said you were laughing out loud. It was so salacious and so nonsensical that it should have been to everybody. But now you have James Baker. He's admitting that he didn't believe any of it. Then it raises the question, well, why did James Comey, the FBI director, sign three of the FISA warrants over a nine-month period of time?
Because James Comey hated Donald Trump and wanted to find a pretext, even a phony excuse, to pursue Donald Trump. And he wanted to drive him from the White House. And Hillary Clinton, the same thing. If she couldn't have the White House, she was going to make sure that Donald Trump couldn't have it either. This was after he was elected. So as I wrote in both of my books, the evidence was clear. Hillary invented the Russia hoax. Ordered the dissemination of the phony information and funded it through Perkins Coie. And today was a classic example of how not to try a case if you're a defense attorney. One of the things you first learn is never call a witness to the stand that's going to come back and bite you in the butt. And that's what happened. The defense calls Mook to the stand to make the point, well, I don't think anybody in the campaign actually told Sussman to go to the FBI. But the downside was horrific for the defense and for Hillary Clinton when Mook said, yeah, Hillary personally approved leaking this bogus information of Trump-Russia.
But I bet you there had to be some reason that Robbie Mook had to tell the truth. He must know there's something in writing that would implicate him, and he knew he couldn't perjure himself. Maybe that's a guess on my part.
He doesn't want to end up at the defense table along with Sussman and Igor Danchenko for lying under oath. So, you know, he had to spill the beans. He had to cough it up and expose Hillary Clinton's personal role in the hoax. We already knew through declassified documents she approved a plan, July 26, 2016, to frame Trump as a Russian asset, knowing full well it was a hoax. It was untrue. She didn't care. She wanted to hurt his chances of winning the presidency and to enhance her own chances of occupying the Oval Office.
Let me get to the bigger question here. Alina, I'll throw it to you first, then we'll get Greg's take. And that is this. Durham has taken forever. I cannot believe this didn't come out before the election in 2020. What do you glean that Durham now understands fully that happened?
Exactly what our case says, that there was a RICO type of conspiracy, and that the conspiracy went, as we learned today, all the way to the top, that there were payments being funneled through a law firm to disguise the conspiracy as a legitimate opposition research, you know, guise, when what he is trying to build is a RICO case. The only way that you get the mob is by starting at the bottom and getting hitman after hitman to testify incorrectly and inconsistently. That is what's happening. It takes time, unfortunately, and with COVID, it obviously didn't help matters with the court system, but he is building that case, and today was groundbreaking. He just shot, Mook just shot us right up to the top.
You know, I can't believe it. I'm sitting here stunned. I mean, I guess maybe in the back of my mind, I'd kind of given up all hope on this. What's your take on Durham and what he really knows at this point, Greg Jarrett?
Well, he knows a lot, and under the U.S. Code, he's required to submit a full report. I don't see how Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, can suppress that report from the public, especially since Bob Mueller's report was largely public. But, you know, let me make one other point here. This was a criminal enterprise under the racketeering law. That is a conspiracy to commit a crime, a joint venture with a group of people, Hillary at the top. And the crime is fraud, defrauding the government. They engaged in an elaborate conspiracy to feed knowingly and intentionally fraudulent information. How did they know it was fraudulent? Because they're the ones who fabricated it. People like Olga Galenka and Charles Dolan Jr. and Igor Danchenko, all Hillary Confederates, fed the phony information to Christopher Steele, which put it in his dossier. And they peddled it to the FBI. They peddled it to the media. But peddling it to the FBI, that's a crime. You are obstructing the legal process, the chief law enforcement agency in the U.S., the FBI, and you are defrauding them with phony information. Hillary should have been charged with conspiracy to defraud the government. But, you know, as she did with her email scandal, she escaped the jaws of justice.
Here's a little more discussion with Sean Hannity with Devin Nunes and his views on the Sussman trial. And also, he tells us a little bit about this new Truth Social, social network. I'm already a member. Join it, okay? So here we go next with Devin Nunes and Sean Hannity.
Really began a really dark chapter in American history that started in late 15, early 16, all because Hillary Clinton was doing something illegal, hit it up, God only knows what exists on those emails, and then they used this and our intelligence agencies, the FBI, to go and spy on the campaign. And that's really at the end of the day here, it kind of appears it's tough to say because you're kind of reading the tea leaves of what we're getting out of the court, but it appears like the Clinton campaign are trying to distance themselves from Sussman, from Fusion GPS that they paid. It kind of seems like that. It seems like Mook really threw them under the bus. It seems like Baker is, you know, he now miraculously has a, you know, perfect recollection of everything that happened. The problem for all of them is that, you know, what we all know, through circumstantial evidence is they were all in on it. So the only question is whether or not they're going to bring down the hammer and get the people upstream. And that's what Durham has to do here. And I think what Mook said today gets them, a little bit farther down that track or up the stream there to other people that should be indicted. Now, I think what Jonathan Turley said in that interview is exactly right. You really have to question, and I won't repeat it all, but you have to question the judge that's involved in here, his relationship, you know, his last relationship.
I'll tell you what, if I'm ever going to, I want this judge, as long as he's going to allow me to pick my best friends and put them on the jury. I really love that if it was happening to me.
Yeah, yeah. What did Turley say that you know, might as well have Chelsea? The only one they're missing on there is Chelsea Clinton.
No, I mean, can you imagine? You got three Clinton donors, and you got one juror that's child is on the same team as the guy that's on trial here. I mean, this is madness.
It is madness. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I've always said, you know, I've of course I never would get picked for juries because the defense always kicked me out. But I always kind of enjoyed going through the process when I was able to go through the process. But I mean, you know, people get, you know, you could be a, you know, three people removed from the defendant and people would get kicked out of the jury pool. I mean, here you have a direct relationship that juror had to know that. And so, this is the problem in D.C. And I think I said this on your show the other night. If Sussman was indicted anywhere but Washington, D.C., this guy would have pled guilty. He would have pled guilty, or, you know, he would have been, you know, he would have disappeared from the planet somehow. I mean, there's this guy, you know, should be, he's willing to serve up to 5 years in prison to cover for all these characters that clearly were all involved in this conspiracy. And Durham's got a hell of a tough row to hoe here.
Well, I don't think he can get a guilty verdict on Sussman here with this jury pool. I just don't. I think the deck is stacked against the prosecution, and they'll say, see, even Durham was wrong, and that's not going to be the case. I think any fair-minded individual, by the way, I wouldn't even want a Trump person on this jury. That would be inappropriate to me as well, just to be clear. All right, quick break, right back. More with Devin Nunes, CEO of Truth Social on the other side, and then your calls as we continue. Suspensions, canceling accounts, all that happened to conservatives, that's not going to happen at Truth Social. Tell us a little bit the 90 seconds we have left about it.
Well, it's amazing what's happening. You know, already you're getting much more interaction on Truth, and you have been now for really, even before we opened.
Even though I have nearly 6 million Twitter followers, I have 1.2 on Truth, and I get more interactions on Truth than I do on Twitter.
Yes, and it's not just you. It's nearly everyone. And, you know, that's happening for two reasons. One, yes, you were being shadow banned, right? And I think for Instagram is different than Twitter. And remember, what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the best of all these social media companies and put it onto one platform that cannot be canceled. So you have, on one hand, I believe on Instagram and Facebook, conservatives are still being shadow banned. But Instagram does have real users. I think what's happening between what Truth Social is doing and Elon Musk kind of dipping his toe into the water, getting involved in Twitter, what it's exposed is that what I've been saying for a long time is, you know, Twitter is basically a big bot farm, and it's a PR wire for celebrities and Hollywood people and political people to post. But for a long time, they've gotten away with inflated numbers. And it's obvious by just the performance and the interactions that people like you are seeing on a platform, Sean, that, look, we've been on Apple. You've been able to get on Apple for a month. And here we are. This is only day three that you can go, you know, through your web browser, truesocial.com, and sign up. And how is it possible that people are getting more?
By the way, it's absolutely free, in case people don't know that.
Exactly. So, look, that's the proof. It's very interesting to watch. And look, you're right. This is going to be a successful company because we are not like we're taking what Truth Social is doing, what Facebook and others were 6, 7, 8 years ago before they started all this crap and censoring. So people are.
I want to say one last thing, and people can just go to truthsocial.com or download it in the App Store. On the one hand, I'm happy for you, but on the other hand, everything you said about Russia collusion and it being a conspiracy theory and a hoax turned out to be true. Everything the congenital liar Adam Schiff said turned out to be lies. When does he ever get held accountable after like 10 seconds?
Well, he represents Hollywood, Sean, and that's, I think that says it all in a nutshell, right?
I mean, we're stuck with him.
Performer.
He has no business being on the Intel committee, in my view, in light of all the leaking, but that's a different issue for a different day. Devin Nunes, CEO, Truth Social, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Here we go next. Jesse Waters with Rand Paul discussing Davos and the New World Order. Very interesting.
Hundreds of gas-guzzling private jets took off this week as billionaires from all over the world jetted off to Davos, Switzerland. for the ritzy and glamorous World Economic Forum, a week-long event for the ruling class to talk down to the rest of us. And it's not for everybody. It's an invite-only event. And once you do get in, they divide you by class. You get a white badge with a blue line if you're rich enough. You just get a white badge if you're married to someone important. Or if you're just a part of someone's entourage, you get an ugly green badge. You're not good enough. They keep the elites together, and they have their own little police state to make sure these people are focused on ruling the world. If you're not from CNN or the New York Times and you show up uninvited, they'll probably arrest you. And it's all headed up by a guy named Klaus Schwab, who's pretty much running a one-world government here. He kicked off the week by saying the future is theirs, not yours.
The future is not just happening. The future is built by us, by a powerful community as you here in this room. We have the means to improve the states of the world.
And the way they start is by tracking you. If you go deep in the weeds in what these people are saying at this place, they're openly scheming up some of the craziest plans you'll ever hear of, like tracking your carbon footprint.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean? That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker. Stay tuned.
You heard it. The one world government wants to keep tabs on what you eat and where you go. All because John Kerry's a little mad that your cheeseburger is wiping out part of the population.
People forget, greenhouse gases are pollution. And 15 million people a year die because of the quality of the air around the world. We're dealing with a crisis here, folks. It's a crisis made by human beings.
Maybe they should take their own advice before jetting off across the world on those private jets, emitting all that carbon. But to them, they have more important things to focus on, like preventing the next pandemic, since it worked out so well last time.
If it comes 10 years from now, we should have far, far better diagnostic technology. That is, be able to scale up every country within a month to diagnose their entire population. We're a little distracted right now, so getting the debate going is happening slowly.
Yeah, a lot of people are distracted by inflation, food shortages, you know, real problems. But the ruling class at Davos says, don't worry, it's all a part of the plan.
We need to accept that there will be some pain in the process. The pace that we need will open up for missteps. It will open up for shortages of energy. It will create inflationary pressures, and maybe we need to start talking about that pain is actually worth it.
If you have all the money in the world, the last thing you have to worry about is inflation. It's our problem, not theirs. They're busy ruling the world. And shady George Soros says if we don't make their ideas a reality, civilization is done for.
Fighting pandemics and climate change, avoiding nuclear war, maintaining global institutions have had to take a backseat to that struggle. That's why I say our civilization may not survive.
Believe it when I tell you, these people don't care about any of us. They're just a bunch of globalists hanging out and coming up with too many bad ideas. Rand Paul, Kentucky senator, and he joins me now. Should the American people be scared when the richest people in the entire world get together at a swanky conference and hatch these crazy ideas about how to make our lives better?
Well, you know, if they really cared, they could have ridden with me. I was on a plane this morning. I was A category on Southwest Airlines, and, you know, hey, that's something. Wasn't a private jet, but they could have saved. When you're on a private jet, they're spending five times as much of a carbon footprint. So if they really cared about that, they could ride on commercial airlines, but they aren't. They're elitist. But the other real danger here that's even more danger than all their phony caring about carbon footprint, the real danger is this. Look how bad your government is in a country where you get to vote for these people. This would be a government, a world government, where you don't get to vote on anybody. This is everybody's worst nightmare. The bureaucracy that we have trouble in our United States because we don't get to vote on them, we vote indirectly. Can you imagine the one world bureaucracy of all these elitists and their private jets that would rule our country and we wouldn't get to vote? So I'm dead set against this. And they used to call people who talked about one world government, they used to say, oh, it's a conspiracy. We would always say, no, it's in their mission statement. They say it at every meeting. That's what they're for. But lack of sovereignty means lack of freedom, and it means lack of responsiveness, and it's completely antithetical to everything our country stands for.
And I don't want to put down Bill Gates and these guys. You know, they do a lot for charity. But when you hear him kind of just dismiss inflation or, you're going to have to go through some pain in order to kind of go with my idea. You know, the American people hear that and they think, come on, man, you're not serious, are you?
But it's not only insensitivity because they've never been to a grocery store and have no idea what things cost, but it's also that we now have a whole set of our political spectrum that's out there saying it's caused by greed. If you were in a third grade class, I would give you a failing grade if you told me inflation was caused by greed. That is the dumbest explanation, the most implausible, and that lacking all facts that someone would try to put forward. Inflation is caused by an increase in the money supply that increases the demand. It's done because we spend too much money. The Federal Reserve prints it up to borrow it. It floods the economy and drives prices up. If you don't understand that, they'll never get it any better. And my prediction is it's going to get a lot worse before November.
What do you think about this tracking technology they're cooking up? They're going to track your carbon footprint. I mean, I think that these liberals are already stressed out enough, Senator. Yeah. Imagine when they find out, like, everything they do is killing the ozone. I mean, they're going to go crazy. They're going to start yelling at us.
Yeah, privacy is not much of a concern for these kind of people. So not only do they want to track you for your carbon footprint, the WHO has announced, you know, they're forming a treaty, and it's going to be a treaty for the next pandemic. But in the next pandemic, it's not going to be a Washington-based mandate on vaccines or a Washington-based social distancing or mask. It's going to be an international one, and they actually want to track everybody with a QRS code. I think that goes beneath the surface right back here, but I'm not sure how they get it in yet. But, no, I mean, it's no laughing matter. It is very worrisome. But whenever they talk about it, they have absolutely no concern for privacy, and you're exactly right. They don't care about the individual. They don't know people like us. They've never been on a bus. They've never been on Southwest Airlines. They've never driven a car. Most of them have never even driven their own car. So these are not the kind of people we want telling the rest of us what to do.
All right. Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky. Flies commercial. Let it be known. Thank you so much, Senator.
Hey, Sean Hannity here. Hey, click here to subscribe to Fox News YouTube page and catch our hottest interviews and most compelling analysis. You will not get it anywhere else.
Closing out the first hour will be Jay Dyer talking about the open conspiracy, H.G. Wells. Boy, this is something, and we'll have a click off where you can go download that book also.
The great Jay Dyer takes over right now from jaysanalysis.com. Jay Dyer, thank you so much, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you, Alex. Glad to be here. It's always an honor to host the fourth hour. Today I'm going to talk about the H.G. Wells book that we've not yet covered. We've covered multiple books from Bertrand Russell, H.G. Wells himself, in terms of the New World Order. But there's another book that he wrote that is just as important, and it's called The Open Conspiracy. This book is aptly titled because it tells you exactly what's going on. It's sort of an eyes wide shut type of title that says, well, we're just going to do this conspiracy out in the open, and it'll be like a gaslighting psyop, and nobody will care or figure it out because we'll put it out there in the open. That way it won't be a conspiracy. Now, he wrote this book in 1928, and the subtitle of the book is Blueprints for World Revolution. So keep in mind that this is co-opting the idea of the liberal revolutionary tradition into the technocratic world order. We know that H.G. Wells was a crucial key propagandist connected to the Fabian Society, connected to the Royal Society. He kind of played that liberal side of the elite power structure in the British Empire as opposed to the more so-called right-wing side. Really, they were both wings of the same bird. And he begins his book by saying that we are expecting chaos and flux in the coming years. So this is, remember, written prior to World War II. He also wrote a book, Shape of Things to Come, written prior to World War II, which pretty much predicts all the elements of World War II. He was off by a few years, I think, because he actually gave a year when he thought the world wars would happen. And he says that what we're going to expect in the next coming years is chaos and disaster. He was definitely right about that, because he was working with the people who essentially planned the two world wars of the 20th century. That is the power elite of the British Empire, the Anglo-American establishment, the Atlanticist power bloc. He begins his book by saying that we know from evolutionary theory that all that exists is matter and flux, pure materialism, pure flux. Again, keep in mind, what do we do? We just see the World Economic Forum luminaries say, you are all matter in motion. You have no soul. You have no free will. We're going to stamp all of that out. Again, 100% in line with the game plan of the technocrats 100 years ago. No different. So basically, we're almost 100 years, right, anniversary of this infamous book, The Open Conspiracy. And he begins his book by saying, after that, with in terms of the discussion of materialism, he says that population growth is just going nuts. That's going to be the main problem of the future. And he says that we've got to analyze the power of capitalism, monopoly capitalism he's talking about, not classic free market capitalism, but the dynastic control of the banking and industrial elite, monopoly capitalism. He says that we're going to have to realize that the power structure that is the monopoly capitalist will have to act to stop a couple big problems in the world. What are the two things, the two sort of firewalls identified by H.G. Wells that have to be gotten rid of to destroy population growth? Well, he's very candid about it. He says that the family, number one, got to get rid of nuclear families, got to get rid of extended families. Number two, nation states. He says patriotism is the first thing that has to die. You can't have people defending their history, their tradition, their heritage, their family. That's got to go away for a technocratic one world order to come into place. He says that we'll use slogans like change and progress to promote and advance the idea that the family and the nation state are inherently bad, inherently evil. They are retrograde. They are for rubes. They are for rednecks. That's for idiots. Only people who are sophisticated, city dwellers, these kinds of people, right? We all know that city-dwelling, cosmopolitan, rootless consumerism is the only way to be progressive, the only way to be forward-thinking. He says that that when we inculcate this, he says that will be the true revolutionary idea by which we will go under the cloak of liberalism, leftism, progressivism. This open conspiracy, he says, is a he says will bring great chaos and flux in terms of these world wars, in terms of the coming years. And he says, but out of the ashes of the chaos will be born this new order. Again, what was the title of his other book very similar to this one? The New World Order. He says that out of the Cold War, he even talks about the post-Soviet state emerging as a utopian era that will be modeled on a capitalist-communist synthesis. He even says the Soviet state's a great idea. We love it. It's Bolshevik. It's in the model for the world order. Don't go anywhere. This is Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. You're watching The Alex Jones Show. Don't leave. Welcome back to The Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We were covering H.G. Wells' book, The Open Conspiracy, and his blueprint of revolution for global government. And he had said that he loved the five-year plan of Stalin and the implementation of phases of these scientific techniques and processes for toppling and restructuring government into a solidified, unified world state. Then he moves on to say that we have to understand where we've come from, how we got here. And he says that the advancements of the scientific revolution and the Enlightenment gave us Darwinism and other such philosophies, which allow us to reform everything that we think about man, man's relationship to other men, the state, society, education, history, philosophy, all of these things, and religion, importantly, he says, have to be rethunk. We have to revise. We have to revolutionize every area of life. There's nothing that can stay permanent and the same or anything that we can pass on, because you see, everything is in flux.